trail, he saw them. Horses feeding on the grass, saddles still in place. The big gray among them. They were close by then. Ten Bryan, someone else, and the two women. Reuben Kelsey eased himself down on his haunches and studied what lay before him. There was a fringe of trees along a trickle of water. No sign of a fire. They were down there, and he could wait. Our time is up for today. I hope you will join me next time when we continue with Under the Sweetwater Rim by Louis L'Amour. This has been Paul Tavilla for GARS, the Georgia Radio Reading Service.
That's all the time we have. Thank you for joining us for the Noon Book Hour. We hope you'll join us again tomorrow for our next installment from the Recording Library of West Texas. This is a Recording Library of West Texas community update.
Grocery store hours during coronavirus. United Supermarket, 6 a.m. to 11 p.m. For shoppers 60 plus, 7 to 9 a.m. Monday and Thursday. For shoppers 60 plus, 7 to 9 a.m. Tuesday and Thursday. HEB, 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. Customers 60 plus. Orders can be called in 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. at 833-397-0080. Groceries will be delivered by Favor Delivery. For more information, go to newsroom.heb.com. Market Street, 6 a.m. to midnight. For shoppers 60 plus, 7 to 9 a.m. Monday and Thursday. Walmart, 7 a.m. to 8:30 p.m. 7 to 8 a.m. curbside delivery pickup for first responders and customers 60 plus with disabilities or at risk.
Sure, Paula Deen and Guy Fieri are experts in the kitchen, but would they be able to pull off their delicious recipes if they had no eyesight? Dale Campbell may have lost his vision, but he didn't lose his creativity. Each week, Dale and co-host Cheryl Cummings bring you new recipes and cooking tips, specifically for those who have low vision or no vision on Cooking in the Dark. Wednesdays at 8, Sundays at noon, and Mondays at midnight on Recording Library of West Texas Radio.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 67 and clear. Tonight, clear with a low in the low 60s. Then, tomorrow, mostly cloudy with a high in the low 80s. Tomorrow night, clear with a low in the low 50s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas. It's 1 p.m.
This program is made available to the IAAIS Program Share and was recorded at the Audio Reading Service of the Ellen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana, for people with print impairments.
Welcome. This is the Prevention Magazine program, and I'm your reader, Adrian Booker, with the Audio Reading Service at the Ellen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Today I'll be reading from Prevention Magazine's December 2020 issue. And now I'll begin with an article entitled, Not Your Daughter's Eating Disorder, by Beth Howard, illustrations by Vicki Turner. We think of problems with food and body image as teen issues, but with crushing stress and changing physiques, women in their 40s, 50s, and older are also at risk. Here's how eating disorders look for adults, and how some women are getting help. Like most women, Kate Moore, at 41, had a lot of balls in the air. She was a married mother of two school-age boys and a nurse at a busy outpatient clinic in North Carolina. After recovering from a hysterectomy, Kate developed IBS-like symptoms on top of the stomach problems she already had because of her anxiety. Before she knew it, she dropped 10 pounds. Once my doctor determined that nothing scary was going on, health-wise, I figured I could keep going, she says. The compliments began pouring in. Kate was exhilarated when she got back to her college weight. Then she was assigned a demanding new boss. My work became stressful and demoralizing, she says. Our schedules were hectic and this just added to a chaotic family life. With her anxiety ramping up, I started feeling like a failure as a mom, wife, nurse, and housekeeper, she says. At the same time, she found herself obsessed with shedding even more weight. I never felt beautiful or particularly thin, and I have always had poor body image. So this newfound attention due to my looks was addicting, she says. Losing weight was a way I could succeed at something and control the chaos. Exercising excessively and limiting her calories to just 100 per sitting and 500 for the day, Kate began making excuses for why she barely ate. I'd say, I ate before I got here. I'm eating several small meals. My stomach is off, she says. She came to believe she could literally feel her flesh expanding with each bite of food, and she began to make herself throw up after eating. Far from creating order, Kate's stringent regimen put a strain on her marriage. She and her husband argued about her weight, which stressed out her children. My sons knew I wasn't eating, and their dad was beside himself with worry, she says. It broke my heart when they made me breakfast in bed, complete with overflowing bowls of their favorite cereal, burned toast, and sloshing glasses of orange juice. Over a few months, she dropped from size 12 to size 4, which triggered heart palpitations, fatigue, bouts of hypoglycemia, and dizziness. It was fainting at work that finally drove Kate into treatment for her eating disorder, which involved 5 years of therapy and included a stint in a residential treatment facility and an intensive program with her husband before she finally recovered. Now 56, she's been at a healthy weight for a decade. Fighting with food. Eating disorders are surprisingly common among women in midlife. A 2012 study in the International Journal of Eating Disorders estimates that 13% of American women 50 and older have eating disorder symptoms, slightly more than the percentage diagnosed with breast cancer. The Renfrew Center, a nationwide network of residential eating disorder treatment clinics, has seen a 42% jump in women over 35 seeking treatment over the past decade. Research shows that though rates of anorexia plateau around age 26, rates of bulimia don't peak until around age 47, and rates of binge eating disorder don't hit their highest level until the 70s. The COVID-19 pandemic has made matters worse for patients of all ages. A new survey of people with eating disorders in the U.S. and the Netherlands shows a sharp increase in food restriction among people with anorexia and anxiety about finding foods consistent with prescribed meal plans. Those with bulimia and binge eating disorder report increased binging. The data suggests that only about 5% to 10% who develop an eating issue get it for the first time as adults. A portion of women had it in adolescence, recovered or partially recovered, and then relapsed later in life, says Cynthia M. Bullock, PhD, founding director at the UNC Center for Excellence for Eating Disorders at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. A portion have had persistent illness, never really recovering, and some seem to have had sub-threshold conditions or hints of an eating disorder in adolescence, but never had it really crystallize into a full-blown diagnosable syndrome until midlife. These women may have been at a low, though not alarmingly low, weight, but may have dieted on and off, may have engaged in compulsive exercise for years, or may have a history of binge eating, but not at a frequency that would have brought it to the attention of a healthcare provider, she says. Swallowing their stress. Like their younger counterparts, older women can experience the primary eating disorders, anorexia nervosa, the extreme restriction of food, bulimia nervosa, gorging and then purging through self-induced vomiting or laxatives, and binge eating disorder, consuming huge quantities of food in a short time. But the lines between these diagnoses often get blurred in midlife. Many older patients started out with one set of symptoms, like restricting anorexia, but shifted into bulimia or binge eating over time, says Margot Main, PhD, a psychologist specializing in eating disorders at midlife and the author of The Body Myth, Adult Women and the Pressure to Be Perfect. The most frequently seen eating disorder in adult women is otherwise specified feeding and eating disorder, OSFED, a combination of anorexic symptoms and bulimia, she says. Another common way eating disorders, or EDs, can manifest in older women is as atypical anorexia. Women with this disorder restrict their eating for days on end. They have every marker of anorexia, except their weight doesn't drop to such a frightening threshold, says Maine. These women may have lost weight, but were at a high weight to begin with, so their weight isn't dangerous based on their BMI, but for their body type, frame, or weight history, they can be in danger. Women with atypical anorexia may have dieted so severely their metabolic rates have slowed to a crawl to defend their bodies against starvation. A vulnerable time. Whether a woman is 15 or 50, an eating disorder is believed to be prompted by genetic factors that include personality traits such as sensitivity to perfectionism, which account for more than half the risk, piling on environmental factors such as the cultural obsession with thinness and youth, or a personal crisis can make it even more likely to be set off. And menopause can bring hormonal shifts that, just as during puberty, spark depression and anxiety, raising the risk of disordered eating even further. Also, physical changes that come with age may take a toll on a woman's body image and confidence. For a variety of reasons, women normally gain about 1.5 pounds per year in their 40s and 50s, research shows. A 2013 Austrian study in the International Journal of Eating Disorders found that women in perimenopause, the roughly 4 to 8 year window that typically falls in a woman's 40s, were more likely than either premenopausal or postmenopausal women to succumb to these disorders. Meanwhile, women deal with unprecedented cultural pressure to stay trim and attractive. Unlike when there were fewer women in the workplace, says Maine, today most women are out in the world and they're being evaluated constantly, which includes what they look like. As more women have positions of power and visibility, the effects of aging are on full display. Looking youthful and thin can seem critical to staying competitive on the job. Then, of course, there is life drama. Divorce, having children leave home, the need to care for aging parents, and other midlife challenges often occur alongside a surge of symptoms. It can happen when your identity is yanked out from under you, says Los Angeles-based author Amy Liu, who suffered from anorexia in her teens and relapsed in her late 20s when her marriage was in trouble. All of a sudden, the number on the scale became the measurement for how I was doing, says Liu. Now 68, author of the memoirs Solitaire and Gaining, The Truth About Life After Eating Disorders. Fortunately, Liu's therapist helped her connect the dots between her stress and returning symptoms, and she recovered relatively quickly. Bodily harm. Eating disorders affect all of the body's organs and systems, from the heart to the hormones. Lack of proper nourishment lowers blood pressure, sometimes to dangerous levels, and estrogen, which can trigger bone loss. As the brain consumes up to a fifth of the body's calories, simple thinking processes and concentration can suffer. Purging can lower the body's electrolytes, leading to heart arrhythmias and even heart failure. But older women with eating disorders may have even more problems. Loss of muscle can slow metabolic rate, and age-related cognitive impairment can manifest faster, says Maine. Digestive troubles like gastroesophageal reflux disease and irritable bowel syndrome are also common. As our organ systems age, they become less resilient, says Bullock. For example, vomiting and having stomach acid coming up the esophagus all the time, the body just doesn't bounce back. Not that it necessarily does when you're an adolescent, but it's worse when you're an adult. Lisa Beth Kaiser, a peer pastoral counselor in Terrace Park, Ohio, battled anorexia in her youth and relapsed when she was 47 and her father was dying. She developed a heart arrhythmia, reflux, and gastroparesis, in which digestion slows and the stomach is slow to empty as a result of her self-induced vomiting and extreme food restriction. It's uncomfortable. I've experienced constipation, horrible bloating, and pain, she says. Yet, after 5 years of various types of therapy, she stopped throwing up, put on a couple of pounds, and made peace with her body. Now 55, she refers to her body as not overweight, but weight restored. It's difficult at times, but I constantly remind myself that I've gained so much more in my life than weight, she says. She has become an eating disorder coach, too. If I'm strong enough to starve myself or make myself throw up, I'm strong enough to live in a weight-restored body, she says. Getting help. For patients who are still struggling, however, dying from an eating disorder is a grim possibility. These diseases have the highest mortality rates of any psychiatric illness. Yet research shows that only 27% of sufferers seek help. One barrier, embarrassment. Women will say, "What am I doing in your office with anorexia?" 16-year-olds get this. "I'm 55, says Ann Kearney Cook, PhD, a psychologist at the Cincinnati Psychotherapy Institute. Just teaching them that research shows that up to 15% of midlife women have an eating disorder is reassuring. It helps them to know that they're not alone. There are two FDA-approved medications for eating disorders, fluoxetine, Prozac, to treat bulimia, and lisdexamfetamine, Vyvanse, for binge eating disorder. Neither is going to be a cure by itself, says Michael Lutter, MD, PhD, a psychiatrist who specializes in treating eating disorders in Plano, Texas, but they are somewhat helpful. Therapy, ideally geared toward adult women, is the primary treatment in a residential facility if the patient is very sick. Allison Smella, a former advertising executive in Glen Ellyn, Illinois, was treated at such a facility when early anorexia symptoms flared up after she got sober in her mid-40s. For 3 months, she received therapy and eating support within a program track specifically for women over 30. We had group sessions where we talked about marriage, work, and kids, she says. The younger patients were talking about boyfriends, parents, and first jobs. Family treatment. Dee Shore, 56, a writer at a university in Raleigh, North Carolina, briefly skirmished with dramatic weight loss in high school and then gained weight in college, but experienced a full-on relapse when she was 42, a few years after her father intentionally drowned himself during a hurricane. Her weight dropped dangerously low until she had to be hospitalized in a locked facility. She wound up being hospitalized 4 times in all. Then, with her husband, she entered a study for adults with anorexia at the University of North Carolina. "It really made a difference for me," she says, called UCAN, Uniting Couples in the Treatment of Anorexia Nervosa. The program recognizes that partners don't know what to do to help and fear that whatever they do will exacerbate the problem. Often they also need relationship work because the eating disorder affects the whole family system, Maine says. The approach educates couples about the recovery process and teaches them effective communication skills so they can be on the same page about goals. That helps women feel they're not in it alone. Eating disorders are complicated, says Maine. Women can just go in and sign up for 6-week sessions of cognitive behavioral therapy. They really need to understand the role this eating disorder has played in their lives, why it emerged, and how they can live without it and start making very difficult changes to their behavior. Yet, women do get better, Maine says, and Lisa Beth Kaiser is living proof. Today I eat to my hunger and enjoy spending time with friends over a glass of wine and good food without throwing up or restricting. And a good cup of coffee, which for me includes half and half, she says. Trust me when I say recovery is worth it. Now I'll be reading an article in Prevention's Health section entitled Insights, Is It a Cold or Is It COVID? By Marissa Cohen. Sniffles and sore throats scream winter as loudly as peppermint mochas and reindeer sweaters. But in the first full winter season of the COVID-19 era, every little cough or headache may ring an alarm bell. Is it just a cold? Is it the flu? Or is it the dreaded coronavirus? It would be great to have a list of signs you could check off to figure out which it was. Unfortunately, COVID-19 is hard to pin down just based on symptoms. Early in the pandemic, we thought you had to have a fever and a cough to have COVID-19. But now we know there's a wide range of how people are responding, so it's challenging to know whether you have it or not, says infectious disease expert Morgan Katz, MD, and assistant professor of medicine at Johns Hopkins Medicine. While the symptoms of COVID-19 can range from non-existent, about 40% of cases are asymptomatic, to deadly, anything in between can look like a common cold or the flu, says Gary Leroy, MD, president of the American Academy of Family Physicians. The three illnesses start similarly. Cold, flu, and COVID-19 are caused by viruses that enter your system when you inhale droplets or aerosols, or less commonly, touch a surface with live virus on it and then your nose, eyes, or mouth. One difference, colds and other mild viruses tend to stay in the upper respiratory tract, but more severe flu viruses and COVID can go into the lungs, causing life-threatening complications, making self-diagnosis even trickier. People can react to the same virus in different ways, depending on factors such as their ages, genders, and underlying conditions. If you're diabetic and catch a cold, it can present differently than in someone who is not diabetic, even if you live in the same household and catch the exact same virus, says Dr. Leroy. Two healthy people in a household can come down with COVID-19, and one may have nothing more than a headache, while the other could be hospitalized with pneumonia. If you have symptoms of any type, call your doctor, who can advise as to whether you should be tested for COVID-19. In July, the FDA approved a multiplex test that looks for flu and COVID-19 with a single swab, making testing more efficient. But no matter what is causing your aches, pains, and sniffles, experts urge you to act with caution. If you feel ill, don't gamble that it will go away, says Dr. Leroy. Given the nature of the time we're living in, assume it's the flu or COVID-19 and stay home. Err on the side of caution until you know what you have. Common cold, typical symptoms. A cold will hit you mostly from the neck up. Think cough, sore throat, stuffy or running nose, and clogged ears. You might feel tired, but you probably won't run a fever. Most of us have had enough winter colds that we know the symptoms we usually present with, says Dr. Leroy. If something feels very different, that's a tip-off that something else might be going on. Onset and duration. Common colds usually burn themselves out in about a week, says Dr. Leroy. Treatment. You know the drill. Make sure you're drinking lots of fluids, eating nutritious foods, and getting plenty of rest, says Dr. Katz. You can take over-the-counter medications to make yourself more comfortable. Seasonal flu. Symptoms. You may experience all of the upper respiratory symptoms of a cold, plus fever and exhaustion, body aches and or chills, and sometimes diarrhea. As the symptoms move farther down your respiratory tract, you may experience breathing problems. Severe cases can lead to pneumonia, inflammation of the heart and brain, and other life-threatening complications. Onset and duration. One difference between a cold and the flu, says Dr. Leroy, is how quickly the flu can knock you out. You can start work feeling fine, and by afternoon you have shaking, chills, rip-roaring pains, and GI symptoms, he says. Symptoms usually last 5 to 7 days, though they'll resolve sooner and be less severe if you've had a flu shot. Treatment. The flu can be treated with antiviral drugs such as Tamiflu. Taken within the first days of illness, they can cut its duration by 1 or 2 days. COVID-19. Symptoms. Every symptom listed above for cold and flu can also be a symptom of COVID-19. Some people could have upper respiratory symptoms. Some have a headache. Some have fever and chills. But then we also see people who just have GI symptoms, says Dr. Katz. More unusual symptoms include eye pain, a red or purple rash on the toes, and dizziness. There are, however, 2 unique symptoms associated with COVID-19. Anosmia. If you lose your sense of smell, it doesn't automatically mean you have COVID-19, but this has been a notable hallmark of the disease. In one study, 87% of COVID patients reported losing their sense of smell at least temporarily. 56% lost their sense of taste. Mental confusion. If you experience delirium while sick, seek medical help. We're seeing mental confusion and personality changes even in people from 20 to 50, says Dr. Leroy. A study in Lancet Neurology found that of 125 COVID-19 patients who displayed neurological symptoms, 31% had some sort of alteration in mental status. Onset and duration. Though COVID-19 symptoms usually ramp up between 2 and 14 days after infection, there is no consensus on how long the illness lasts. Some people have minor symptoms that shake off in a few days. Others may be sick for weeks or even months. Treatment. As of this writing, there are no drugs approved to treat COVID-19, though several are being tested. Your best course of action is the same as for the common cold. Rest, stay hydrated, and take over-the-counter meds for your symptoms. Most important, stay home and isolate yourself from others in your house. Well, that's all the time we have for today. This has been Adrienne Booker with the Prevention Magazine program. I hope you have enjoyed today's reading from the audio reading service at the Allen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 68 and clear. Tonight, clear with a low in the low 60s. Then, tomorrow, mostly cloudy with a high in the low 80s. Tomorrow night, clear with a low in the low 50s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas.
This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by GARS, the Georgia Radio Reading Service. Hello, I'm Allison Ramsey, and this program is Health Magazine. Today, I'll begin reading from health.com. The first story is, what can you do once you've been fully vaccinated for COVID? Here's what the CDC says. Small maskless gatherings with other fully vaccinated people and with low-risk unvaccinated people are okay, but continue to take precautions in public. By Patty Greco, updated on March 9, 2021. Is it wise to return to indoor dining once you've been fully vaccinated? Is it foolish to go to the movies? There's been a lot of confusion around what sort of pre-pandemic activities you can or should resume once you've had your COVID-19 shots, or shot, in the case of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. Now the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, is providing some long-awaited direction. The advice amounts to a huge step forward for millions of people yearning for some level of normalcy. In guidelines released today, the agency gives the green light for people who are fully vaccinated to have small maskless gatherings with low-risk unvaccinated people. It defines fully vaccinated as 2 weeks after receiving the second dose of the Moderna or Pfizer vaccine, or 2 weeks after the single-dose Johnson & Johnson vaccine. Specifically, the CDC says fully vaccinated people can visit with unvaccinated people from a single household who are at low risk for severe COVID-19. The level of precautions taken should be determined by the characteristics of the unvaccinated people who remain unprotected against COVID-19, CDC notes. The guidelines also state that fully vaccinated people can socialize indoors with other fully vaccinated people without distancing, and that they can skip quarantine and testing if exposed to an asymptomatic COVID-19 case. However, they should still monitor for symptoms for 14 days. This marks a greater return to normal than was anticipated by the CDC's draft guidelines, which were widely reported last week. A vaccinated healthcare worker might now be able to see her unvaccinated sister for the first time in a year, for instance. Vaccinated grandparents can see their unvaccinated grandchildren. CDC says it will update its recommendations as more people are vaccinated, rates of community spread of the virus change, and additional scientific evidence becomes available. What you still shouldn't do. What the guidelines don't do is give the vaccinated population the all clear to act like it's 2019. The CDC still advises that everyone, including vaccinated people, wear a mask and keep good physical distance around the unvaccinated who are at high risk for severe COVID, or if the unvaccinated person has a vulnerable household member. The agency also recommends that you continue to wear masks and social distance in public. Avoid medium and large crowds and poorly ventilated places, and practice good hand hygiene. We still need for a period of time to be cautious, says William Schaffner, MD, an infectious disease specialist at the Vanderbilt University School of Medicine. We shouldn't think of vaccination as a suit of armor, as if you're just impervious to everything, especially since much of the population has yet to be vaccinated. Transmission rates are still really high, and we still haven't vaccinated enough vulnerable people. Kate Grabowski, PhD, an epidemiologist at Johns Hopkins, tells Health, "Now isn't the time to go buck wild." What are the CDC's travel guidelines for the fully vaccinated? The CDC hasn't updated its travel guidance. It currently advises people to avoid non-essential travel. So even if you're fully vaccinated, taking a train, plane, or bus to grandma's house when the nation remains in a serious pandemic isn't recommended. CDC Director Rochelle Walensky, MD, addressed the issue during a White House briefing on Monday. "Every time that there's a surge in travel, we have a surge in cases in this country," she says. "We know that many of our variants have emerged from international places, and we know that the travel corridor is a place where people are mixing a lot," she explained. So while the CDC may weigh in on the issue of travel in future guidance, for now, the agency is really trying to restrain travel. On the other hand, if your loved one lives across town, that's another story. "We would like to give the opportunity for vaccinated grandparents to visit their children and grandchildren who are healthy and who are local," Dr. Walensky says. Can I still spread coronavirus after getting the vaccine? One cause for confusion has been the lingering uncertainty around whether or not the vaccine protects from contracting COVID-19 and therefore spreading the virus. How can you calculate risk if you aren't sure what sort of threat you might pose to others? Serious concern was understandable at first. When we conducted the trials for the vaccine, the primary outcomes that were assessed were severe disease, death, and symptomatic infection, Grabowski says. The studies didn't include asymptomatic infection, which is a key piece to whether a vaccinated person can spread the virus, and so we were pretty loath to make any statements on whether the vaccine protects against transmission. But now there's mounting evidence that you're unlikely to contract the virus if you are vaccinated, and therefore unlikely to spread it to others. One study from Israel, for example, shows that vaccination prevents 89.4% of infections, including those that are asymptomatic. On top of that, preliminary research has shown that nasal viral loads from post-vaccination exposures are low and likely non-infectious because the body's immune defenses are acting fast to stop viral replication. What we should have said from the start was, they're likely to reduce transmission, but we don't know yet, so let's wait for some real-world data, says Monica Gandhi, MD, an infectious disease expert at the University of California, San Francisco. Because now the real-world data has come out in droves, they reduce transmission, and yet we still continue to this day to say that they're not going to. The idea that they don't is the December 2020 message. Does the vaccine protect against variants? It seems like there's a new viral variant, whether from South Africa, California, or Brazil, to worry about each week, leaving vaccinated people with another uncertainty. Am I actually protected against all strains of COVID? I don't think we really know if the vaccine protects us against the variants at the same level of effectiveness as we saw in the clinical trials, Grabowski says. But that doesn't mean you're entirely without protection. I think the key thing to keep in mind is that the reason this disease is so bad is that it's novel, she says. Our body has never seen anything like this type of coronavirus before. But if you get the vaccine, your body has seen something like it before. After all, that's what the vaccine does. It prompts the body to recognize the virus so that the immune system will be prepared to fend off this foreign enemy when it encounters it in the future. Dr. Gandhi is even more optimistic about the vaccine's ability to protect against variants. When we think about antibodies, we can endlessly worry, because it does actually look like after you've been vaccinated, these antibodies do not work as well against the various variants, she says. But essentially, vaccines generate two types of immune responses, antibodies and T cells. The latter works against multiple parts of the virus, she explains, including those parts that are the same across variants. Weighing the risks. What's safe, what's not. Dr. Schaffner recommends using vaccination as an opportunity to adjust your risk budget. Perhaps you're now willing to shop at the grocery store after months of having your food delivered. Maybe you're comfortable going to the salon after a year of cutting your own hair. Again, while following public safety guidelines. For her part, Grabowski is now comfortable having her vaccinated parents visit with her 2-year-old son, but she isn't planning to eat at an indoor restaurant, despite being vaccinated herself, just yet. She's waiting for infection rates to go down substantially. If you have the vaccine, your risk is much, much lower, she says. But is it zero? No. So, are you willing to accept some of that risk knowing that the background transmission rates are quite high? I don't know. That's up to you. For me, personally, and I think a lot of these will come down to individual decisions, small incremental increases in my exposures with family members or friends that are vaccinated are probably fine. but I'm not going to continue to resume my normal activities pre-pandemic until enough people in my community have been vaccinated, and especially those who are most vulnerable. The good news is that she doesn't see that version of life being very far off at all. We are in the final stretches of this thing, she says. We literally have a couple of months left. If we can just all sit tight, it's not always going to be this way. The information in this story is accurate as of press time. However, as the situation surrounding COVID-19 continues to evolve, it's possible that some data have changed since publication. While Health is trying to keep our stories as up-to-date as possible, we also encourage readers to stay informed on news and recommendations for their own communities by using the CDC, WHO, and their local public health departments as resources. That story was, What Can You Do Once You've Been Fully Vaccinated for COVID? Here's What the CDC Says, by Patty Greco, updated on March 9, 2021, on health.com. Switching to the January-February 2021 issue of Health Magazine, I'll read The World According to Drew. Start the new year on a bright note with the iconic actress and talk show host. She's sharing her thoughts on everything from kindness to honest parenting to realistic self-care, by Bethany Heitman. It's easy to think of Drew Barrymore as a longtime friend, and not just because many of us have been watching her on the big screen for almost four decades, in iconic movies like E.T., Never Been Kissed, Charlie's Angels, and more. What makes her feel like such a close pal are the qualities she brings to everything she's done, from her superstar roles to her beauty brand, Flower Beauty. No matter what, Drew always exudes a rare combination of eternal warmth, positivity, humor, and realness. For Drew, those traits are a vital part of staying healthy and well. I really like to be silly. I can't really stop myself, she admits. I think your body chemistry changes when you're laughing. I respect laughter. It is medicine. This belief was top of mind as she created the Drew Barrymore Show, her daytime talk show that premiered this past fall on CBS. The 45-year-old's goal was to blend news and human interest stories in a way that was honest and uplifting. Another core belief that Drew lives by, that kindness and taking care of one another is the path forward, particularly after the tumultuous year we all just had. And that's exactly why Health chose Drew to be on the cover of our first ever change issue. Whether you're wanting to make change in the world or within your personal life, Drew's idea of leading with kindness is inspiring. What made you want to create the Drew Barrymore Show? I love comedy and celebrating people. I also like the news and human interest. I don't care if it's naive, but I can't not try to find the good in people. Health, wellness, interior design, beauty, I get to cover all these different facets of things I've been involved with. It's more about spending time in my life. It's about the pillars in life that we're all interested in. What do you try to bring to the screen each time you film? I just keep trying to meet the moment and be myself. I know authentic is such a grossly overused word, but I just want to be truthful, honest, honoring, and aware while being myself, because I don't know who else to be. I would just be lost. We are what we have to rely on, which is terrifying, but what is the alternative? Let's talk about Flower Beauty. You launched it in 2013 and appear to be very hands-on with the business. Is that accurate? Yes, I'm in the labs. I'm very into the packaging, the formulation, the marketing, all of that. We started in a very MacGyver way with a small team, and we've really grown. We're in the best place we've ever been. And that took years of figuring out. The formulas have been my main thing. A woman can't have lipstick that frays at her lips, and she needs eyeliner that stays on. And it's not expensive, because I'm not into expensive stuff. I don't want to buy it, and I don't want to sell it. Beyond beauty, you have quite a few other business ventures. Yes, home, kids, eyewear, beauty, and now hair. Over the course of nearly 10 years, to do that thoughtfully is a lot. We have this insane kitchen line coming out called Beautiful. I'm so crazy about the direction. It's not what I would have expected at all from myself. I like to make things. I can't stop. This health issue focuses on change. What does that word mean to you? Change is everything. It's so vital. Everything is always changing, but there are also fundamentals. I think 2020 made us rethink our fundamental everything. It's hard to predict where our country will be, what will be representative of our morals. The only thing we have control of is ourselves, and that's not selfish and indulgent. You only have control over how you take care of people. And I do think that's the meaning of life. We're here to take care of each other. Do you think the events that took place in 2020 will lead to or inspire change? No life escapes trauma, and the human experience is so complex, but I love the eye-opening that 2020 brought. You thought you understood, but there's something about 2020 that basically feels like a rebirth. That's such a powerful thing. That's all I keep thinking about. It's come back anew. That's change. Your daughters are 8 and 6. With so much going on in the world, from COVID-19 to Black Lives Matter to the election, how did you approach those subjects with them? I am extremely honest, and I try to be honest in a way that doesn't scare them. What I do not want to do is take my kids' sense of security and safety away. That's me robbing them of something by keeping them informed. But they are very informed. They know exactly who is doing what and what is happening. They are incredibly tuned in on our world. We're just going to figure out a way to be totally worldly, mindful, aware, astute, super empowered with all the information. My biggest art is to do it without instilling fear. They march in marches, and they canvass our building to get people to vote. Are you strict with television and media? They watch some TikTok. I have the rule of not really having the news on very loud around them, but their school talks to them about it. And they know, and I'm glad. I want to keep them kids as long as possible, and that's why I'm really protective about putting them out there in the world. That is where I'm a complete Doberman. I'd rather have my kids know more about the world than show my kids to the world. Switching gears, you post a lot about wellness on social media. What's one wellness practice you haven't mastered yet? I've never had balance. I think balance is an elusive bitch who has evaded me my entire life. I'm just ready to wrestle her to the ground and have an old-fashioned hair-pulling girl fight with her. I'm the most wrecking ball pendulum of extremes with no pretty little middle. Have you started to win that fight? I've got her pinned down right now. It feels better than usual. The past year has been, in a lot of ways, a really healthy year for me, ironically, considering everything going on. I exercise, and I had already gained the weight everyone else talks about gaining. I had been doing that every year prior. You've been very candid on Instagram about feeling like you needed to get in better shape. How are you feeling about where you are now? Good. I'm not a straight arrow, so I will never be all one thing, eating the perfect food and working out every day. I just will never be that person. Between my kids and work, I don't have the time in life. But I realize that if I'm more consistent about it and carve out the time for it, it leads to a better life. Before, it was all workout or none, and that really didn't suit me. I had to prioritize it. But I will tell you, it is like third on my list. It probably should be first, but it's like kids and work are probably rivals. But I'm glad about that, because years ago, working out was like number 24 on the list. Actually, my health is fourth on the list. My friendships are third, but hey, it's in the top five, so that's good. What do your friends mean to you? My girlfriends were my first family. My friendships really are gardens, and I cultivate them. I've been friends with all my friends for like 20, 30, 40 years. I just want to be with my very real friends, and it's hella fun, but it's effing real. My relationships with my friends. Friendships are not frivolous. It's important. Looking at your life, what are you most proud of? If I can say it in a way that's not self-congratulatory, I'm happy that I'm still working. I have the privilege to work, and I work as hard as I possibly can to maintain that privilege. In my personal life, it's my kids. They are my very first priority with everything. It's such a hard thing to be a parent, and I just want to take care of them to the best of my ability. Those two girls are the best thing I'll ever do with my life. That story was The World According to Drew by Bethany Heitman. The next stories come from the section The Share. New Year, New Do. After months of dealing with grown-out roots, brassy color, and split ends, it makes sense that low-maintenance looks are having a moment. Here's some inspo so you can feel good without committing to the salon every few weeks. If you need an update, a chic one-length bob is stylish and timeless, and better yet, it takes little to no effort to style straight if you already have straight hair. Says Drew Schaffering, master stylist at Rob Pitum Salon in Brooklyn, New York. If you're a curly girl, he recommends a graduated or rounded crop to lessen weight and create more bounce. If you aren't ready to lose length, try adding some square layers to build volume and give your hair some life, advises Schaffering. Lacey Redway, celebrity hairstylist and Nexus ambassador, emphasizes that it's important for your hairstyle to fit your lifestyle. If you don't want to fuss over your do, make sure your layers are long enough to place into a ponytail, she says. If you are addicted to color, switch from a single process or highlights to a balayage, a painting technique that's more forgiving. Brighter tips and blended roots disguise growth and allow for time between touch-ups, Schaffering adds. Use a heat protectant when styling. Try Pantene Pro-V Nutrient Boost Heat Primer, $5.90 at Target.com. If you want to save time in the AM, bring a new low-maintenance style into your routine. To add texture and smooth frizz, set your hair overnight in two pigtail braids and let them loose in the morning before your video call, says Redway. A leave-in conditioner will lock in the moisture. Redway recommends Nexus Prep and Protect Leave-In Spray with Hyaluronic Acid and Elastin Protein. $10, Target.com. That story was New Year, New Do, from the section The Share. The next story is from the section From the Editor. Bring the Boutique Studio Home. Fitness studios all over the country have upped their online offerings, which lets us all sample so many different classes. Two of my favorites right now are Trooper Fitness for crazy hard and inspiring strength and cardio, and Jabs by Gina for super fun high energy shadow boxing. Some studios have even adapted their equipment. Board 30 introduced the Board 30 Mini, a compact and versatile piece of gear that lets you do its full body resistance band workout at home or in your backyard. $250, BORD30global.com. That story was Bring the Boutique Studio Home, from the January-February 2021 issue of Health Magazine. That concludes today's readings of Health Magazine. This has been Allison Ramsey for the Georgia Radio Reading Service. Thank you for listening to GARS.
Next on Recording Library of West Texas Radio, USA Today, followed by the Midland Reporter Telegram and Odessa American at 3.
This is a Recording Library of West Texas Community Update.
The Midland Health Department is providing clinical services by appointment only. Appointments will be scheduled from 8:15 a.m. to 3:45 p.m. Monday through Friday. The Health Department will have immunization clinics 8:15 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday. Appointments are required for immunizations. To schedule an appointment, call 681-7613.
Sunday afternoons, we take you around the Lone Star State for 3 hours, starting at 2 p.m. with Texas Monthly Archives. At 3, it's the current issue of Texas Monthly Magazine. At 4, Travelin' Texas. And at 4:30, Texas Gardener. Sunday afternoons, beginning at 2, on Recording Library of West Texas Radio. Read by listening.
Picking up the pieces of my sweet shadow dream. I wonder how the old folks are tonight. Her name was Anne, and I'll be damned if I recall her face. She left me not knowing what to do. Every highway, let me slip away on you. Every highway, you see. Better days, the morning after blues, from my head down to my shoes. Every highway, let me slip away on you. Times I love best. I wonder if she'll ever do the same. Now the thing that I call living is just being satisfied with knowing I got no one left to blame. Every highway I got to see you, my old flame. Every highway you seem better days. The morning after blue. Head down to my shoes. Every highway, let me slip away on you. Searching through the fragments of my dream-shattered sleep. Wonder if the years have closed your mind. I guess in
must be wanderlust or trying to get free from the good old faithful feeling we once knew. Carefree highway, let me slip away on you. Carefree highway, you've seen the better days, the morning after blues, from my head down to my shoes.